This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Culture and Society and News for Young People. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by African News Panorama. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis on Thursday morning met with young priests and monks of the Oriental Orthodox churches taking part in a study visit to Rome. In his prepared remarks, the Holy Father said as Christians we should express our common faith in respect and fraternal love, saying that the Nicene Creed, the product of the First Ecumenical Council, unites all Christians. Devin Watkins reports.
The proclamation of our common faith requires before all else that we love one another. Pope Francis offered that reminder on Thursday as he met with a delegation of Orthodox clergy taking part in a study visit to Rome. Promoted by the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity, the fifth study visit brought together priests and monks from several Oriental Orthodox churches. In his greetings to the group at the Casa Santa Marta, the Pope called the annual visit an exchange of gifts, which helps theological dialogue to go hand in hand with the dialogue of charity. He noted that this year marks the 1700th anniversary of the Council of Nicaea, the first ecumenical council which produced the Nicene Creed, a symbol of faith professed by all Christians. Pope Francis went on to explore the meaning of the term symbol in reference to the Nicene Creed. On a theological level, he said, the creed sets forth the ensemble of the principal truths of the Christian faith which harmoniously complement one another. The Nicene Creed, he added, was the first synthetic symbol created by the Church and was therefore exemplary and unparalleled. The Pope said the Creed also bears an ecclesiological significance since it unites both truth and believers as a single Christian people. Each Christian, added the Pope, possesses a piece of the symbol which can be fully expressed only when united completely to all other pieces. Pope Francis then reflected on the spiritual significance of the symbol of faith, recalling that it is primarily a prayer of praise that unites Christians to God. Union with God necessarily takes place through unity among us Christians who proclaim the same faith, he said. The Pope urged us to feel united to Christians of all traditions when we profess our faith by proclaiming the Nicene Creed. In conclusion, Pope Francis expressed his hope that the study visit of the Oriental Orthodox priests and monks would serve as a symbol of communion as the Church journeys toward full union for which Jesus prayed. I'm Devin Watkins.
The Holy See Press Office on Thursday released Pope Francis' message for World Mission Sunday, which during this Jubilee year falls on the 19th of October. In the message entitled Missionaries of Hope Among All Peoples, the Holy Father says the motto reminds individual Christians and the entire Church, the community of the baptized, of our fundamental vocation to be in the footsteps of Christ, messengers and builders of hope. Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
Pope Francis says that prayer is not only the primary missionary activity, but also the key to keeping alive the spark of hope lit by God within us. The Holy Father gave this comforting reminder in his World Mission Day message for 2025. The Pope expressed his wish that the day be a time of grace before going on to reflect on three aspects of our Christian missionary identity. Reflecting first on following the Lord's footsteps, he encouraged, may we too feel inspired to set out in the footsteps of the Lord Jesus to become with him and in him signs and messengers of hope for all. The Pope examined Christians as bearers and builders of hope among all peoples. In following Christ the Lord, he urged, Christians are called to hand on the good news. impelled by Christian hope, he said Christian communities can be harbingers of a new humanity in a world that in the most so-called developed areas shows serious symptoms of human crisis. The gospel, the Pope reassured, can restore us to a whole, healthy, redeemed humanity. Finally, the Pope turned to the third aspect of renewing the mission of hope. Faced with the urgency of the mission of hope today, he said, Christ's disciples are called first to discover how to become artisans of hope and men and women of prayer. By praying, Pope Francis marveled, we keep alive the spark of hope lit by God within us so that it can become a great fire which enlightens and warms everyone around us. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
In Burkina Faso, Pope Francis has named Father David Kudugu as Bishop of the Diocese of Tenkodogo. Bishop-elect Kudugu has been serving as Apostolic Administrator of the same diocese. He was born on the 1st of August 1972 in Tenkodogo and ordained a priest on the 14th of July 2001 after completing his studies in philosophy and theology at the major seminary of St. John Baptist of Wayalgin in Ouagadougou. Bishop-elect David Kudugu has served in various roles after his ordination, including as parish vicar, professor of canon law, official of the Metropolitan Tribunal of Kupela, member of the College of Consultors of the Metropolitan Archdiocese of Kupela, and as secretary general of the Episcopal Commission for Ecclesiastical Tribunals and Judicial Affairs of the Episcopal Conference of Burkina Faso. He was awarded a doctorate degree in canon law by the Pontifical Gregorian University of Rome in 2016. The Justice and Peace Commission of the South African Catholic Bishops Conference has demanded justice for the victims of a listeriosis outbreak 8 years ago. South Africa's largest food company, Tiger Brands, was reportedly responsible for the severe foodborne disease outbreak. Sheila Purish has this report.
The Justice and Peace Commission of the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference has been a prominent advocate for justice for the victims of the 2017 to 2018 listeriosis outbreak linked to Tiger Brands, the tragic outbreak which claimed over 200 lives and left thousands with lasting health complications, has traced to contaminated products from a factory owned by Tiger Brands' subsidiary, Enterprise Foods. Since then, the SACBC Justice and Peace Commission, together with Richard Spur Incorporated and LHL attorneys, have worked tirelessly to support affected families in their ongoing struggle for accountability and restitution. After years of legal battles, on Monday, February 3rd, Tiger Brands announced that they had reached an agreement for advance payments to be made to the first of a number of persons who are seeking interim assistance to address urgent medical needs while the class action continues. Father Stan Muyebe, coordinator of the ACCBC Justice and Peace Commission, highlights the church's unwavering support over the past 6 years, providing legal, emotional, and spiritual accompaniment to affected families.
We felt that it was important as a church that we don't just help them to with their litigation, access to justice, but we should also do a pastoral accompaniment. So we have been throughout the years been accompanying some of the families. There is a lot of pain and suffering, a lot of pain and suffering. We have visited families where somebody has been, they have been working hard to have a child, and then because of listeriosis, they lost the child. We have cases of children that are born with deformities. They're not able to go to school because of the deformities that they have, the brain deformities, a lot of cases of pain. We have been accompanying them to give them a sense of hope.
In a joint press conference with Richard Spur Incorporated and LHL attorneys held in September 2024, the SACBC Secretary General, Father Hugh O'Connor, criticized the legal delays, stating that justice is being denied not only by big businesses and insurers, but also by a system that allows legal maneuvering at the expense of vulnerable people and urged Tiger Brain's legal stakeholders as well as health authorities to work together in good faith to expedite a fair settlement.
Sheila Furish reporting. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
More than 100 female prisoners were raped and then burned alive during a jailbreak in the Congolese city of Goma, according to the United Nations. Hundreds of prisoners broke out of Munzenze prison last Monday after fighters from the M23 rebel group began to take over the city. Between 165 and 167 women were assaulted by male inmates during the jailbreak. Media reports state that most of the women were killed after the inmates set fire to the prison. Goma, a major city of more than a million people, was captured after the Rwanda-backed M23 executed a rapid advance through Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The United Nations says at least 2,900 people were killed during the fighting, with 2,000 bodies buried already and another 900 still in the city's morgues. Earlier this week, the rebels announced a ceasefire on humanitarian grounds, but the M23 rebels launched a new offensive on Wednesday, reportedly capturing the mining town of Nyabibwe. Located about 100 kilometers from Bukavu, the reported target of the rebels' most recent advance. Meantime, Malawi has announced it will start preparations for a withdrawal of its peacekeeping forces from the Democratic Republic of Congo. This follows the killing of three of its soldiers in the fighting around Goma. They were part of a Southern African force led by South Africa. Although 14 South Africans have been killed, President Cyril Ramaphosa has vowed to keep his forces in the country. At least 17 children have died in a fire at an Islamic school in northern Nigeria. Officials said several other pupils were injured and rushed to health centers in Zamfara State for treatment. It is believed that the fire broke out in a nearby house on Tuesday night and spread to the school, where the children, believed to be aged 10 and 16, were sleeping. The authorities say they are investigating the cause of the fire, while they also try to help those injured to recover. The authorities believe there were about 100 pupils in the school. United States Secretary of State Marco Rubio will not attend an upcoming G20 meeting in South Africa. The top United States diplomat made this announcement on Wednesday, days after President Donald Trump threatened to cut off funding to the African country. South Africa has the G20 presidency from December 2024 to November 2025 and will host a meeting of foreign ministers of the G20 group of countries from February 2021 in Johannesburg. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio. This is Culture and Society, and welcome to the program. In this edition, we focus on immigrants and the discrimination they face wherever they are and what ought to be done in order to stop that. My name is Kanyan Tagodfri Kampamba. America is a rich community of immigrants from across the world, yet many immigrants in the United States face discrimination in society and in everyday life. The immigrant experience in America is rife with conflict. Recent developments in the United States have seen President Donald Trump signing a series of executive orders with far-reaching consequences for migrants in the United States. Donald Trump's approach is clear because it aims at making immigration and asylum more difficult, deport undocumented immigrants, and close the borders. This scenario makes it appropriate to screen a movie on the scourge of migrant discrimination right there in the United States. The stunning new film is called Cabrini, and it portrays the hardships faced by vulnerable migrants moving to New York City at the turn of the last century. The film also provides a timely reminder that there is still much that needs to be done in order to help vulnerable people on the move everywhere in the world today. It was just as well that the United Nations hosted the screening of Cabrini, named after the main character in the film. The star of the movie is Cristiana Delana, Italian missionary mother Francesca Cabrini, who is famous for working in New York's slums, providing shelter, education and hope to street children who faced discrimination and rank racism in their new adopted homes. Delan attended the screening of Cabrini and later spoke to Daniel Johnson from the United Nations News about her conviction that migrant discrimination can be overcome.
To set the scene, and hopefully without giving anything too important away, the film Cabrini tells the story of an Italian nun, Mother Francesca Cabrini, who's tasked by the Pope to help the most vulnerable migrants arriving in New York at the turn of the last century. It was a highly unusual mission, but quite an apt description of Mother Cabrini's life. She was a very sick child, but refused to let her illness hold her back. Once in New York, she set to work opening an orphanage with the help of other nuns. It's a fantastic movie, shocking in parts, yes, but hopeful too. Maybe you could tell us first what drew you to this film, which goes to some pretty dark places, does it not?
This film does go to some dark places because it does, even though it's set so long ago, it's actually very contemporary and it does interpret our reality nowadays because things haven't really changed. Maybe the context has changed, the situation for migrants. If it hasn't worsened, it's remained pretty much the same. It's very difficult to migrate from one place to another. It's probably one of the reasons why I was drawn to the story. Of course, it's a great role, and to be the lead of a story of a film, you know, for an actor, it's always a good reason to be involved in a project. But this one particularly, because being from southern Italy, the migration issue is very close to my heart. Southern Italians have always emigrated throughout history, especially during the Second World War. And I have in my family people who have emigrated, and I am an immigrant myself. I went to England when I was a young adult. And we do have this phenomenon now happening in the southern shores of Italy. So it's a very contemporary issue. To me, this was also an opportunity to tell the story of my people, but also our contemporary story as a Mediterranean community and what is happening nowadays. This movie gives us an opportunity, gave me an opportunity to tell a little bit of what we went through when we were the ones migrating, and now we are the ones actually denying the right of dignity, which, in my opinion, is a universal right and should be recognized as such. So I often ask myself, what does the migrant stand today in a world where it's easy to trade merchandise and it's easy for things to travel around the world rather than human beings? I wonder, we should probably reflect on these issues and understand where we place humankind compared to objects, to things. It seems they have more value than people themselves.
Now, the film Cabrini is set in an often violent slum in New York called Five Points. It was home to the migrants that Mother Cabrini wanted to help and felt drawn to help. I wonder, how realistic is this portrayal of the really shocking conditions that migrants faced? And how about the racism that they encountered too from many people, including the authorities? For example, we hear how children and Mother Cabrini herself are called monkeys and guinea pigs because of their dark skin.
It's interesting you mention how accurate this film is. It is very accurate. In fact, there's one particular shot I'm thinking of some children sitting on just by a little wall, and it's inspired by a picture that was taken during those times. So it is very accurate, and everything you see in the movie has actually happened at some point. With the discrimination of what immigrants went through, after a little bit of research, I realized how that happened right after the abolition of slavery. And it seemed interesting to me, it seemed like a coincidence, but not really, that discrimination became a huge part of how the immigrants were seen, because an almost natural substitution of black labor intended as black and as illegal, than Italian, who often were compared to African immigrants because of the dark features, because of the ability to work really long hours, endure horrible conditions.
Now, the current global estimate is that there are around 280 plus million international migrants in the world. And overall, the estimated number of international migrants has increased over the past decades. I think people would be interested to know, why are you here at the United Nations? I mean, we have agencies that help people on the move all the time. We have agencies that help to lobby for asylum and better asylum laws and systems so that they can access their rights, you know, people who are very vulnerable, as we see in the movie. So what would you like us to do? What's your key message?
I believe being at the UN is the perfect place to screen a film like this. Obviously, the people involved in an actual change of the rules of how we see the world and how we relate to each other, that's where things are actually done. But the power of storytelling and how it inspires people, it is something we tend to forget sometimes. We've forgotten how to be inspired. And I just think that Cabrini could very much aid that idea because it's a true story. It's a very compelling one. I think it's not because I did it, but it's a beautiful film. And I just thought that starting a dialogue in that sense and being here, it could be a good starting point to maybe try and ground again certain ideas or ideals and principles. They should be our guidance through our daily life for everyone, for every nation that is involved. It should be a daily talk for everyone who talks at the United Nations. So I just think the dialogue has to keep going, and one of the best ways to do it is through art. I do believe in the power of art.
There's a line in the film that jumped out at me. Mother Cabrini says, "It takes a lot of courage to find out what we can do." Bear in mind, she went from Italy, crossed the Atlantic, turn of the last century. In fact, she crossed the Atlantic 20 plus times in her life.
28.
Incredible. 28 times, was it? So I go back to that line. It takes a lot of courage to find out what we can do. Probably takes a lot of courage to play her because she was so impressive. Were you not daunted by taking it on?
Thank you so much for bringing up that line, because I put it there. It wasn't in the script. And I just thought that it was fundamental, especially between the two women who are talking, because I say it to Victoria, to the prostitute who's been beaten up and is, you know, one of the people that she helps. I think I was drawn to her and I felt compelled to tell her story more than anything else. I feel very much close to her values, and at some point during filming, I didn't know if it was me talking or her. I share so much of her values and what she believed in. I'm not a religious person in terms of not a nun. I'm an actress. I'm something completely different to what Cabrini was. But I remember every day going on set thinking that I would never settle for anything less than the values that she would pursue. And it's become a little bit of a mantra for my own life and my own discipline as an actress and as a woman and as a human being.
It's a fantastic lesson for us all. I was going to ask you what the hardest part about playing Mother Cabrini was, but I think you've probably explained that it's you're still playing her. So from
maybe
all of us,
she's playing me. Just kidding.
If she were here today, what would she make of this movie?
I think she would be really pleased that we are telling the story, not because of her, but because of the other huge main character that is in the story, which is the migrant. She'd be really pleased, because this is a very pertinent and contemporary issue that she would still address and she would still fight for. So the sole fact that we are talking about it, she'd probably be saying something. She was very pragmatic. She would say, press on.
Christiana Delana, who plays the real-life Italian missionary mother Francesca Cabrini in the movie called Cabrini, she was talking there to Daniel Johnson about her conviction that migrant discrimination can be overcome. And that is all we have time for in this edition of Culture and Society. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
And now, news for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. As we reported on Monday, Pope Francis, in his opening address at the first ever world meeting on children's rights, urged world leaders to listen to children suffering from war, poverty and migration. Speaking in the Vatican's Clementine Hall, the Holy Father also drew attention to his concern that young people, themselves a sign of hope, are struggling to find hope in today's world. The summit entitled Love Them and Protect Them brought together world leaders, religious representatives and child rights advocates. In his closing remarks at the same meeting on Monday, the Pope announced plans to write an apostolic exhortation dedicated to children. He said the document aims to give continuity to the commitment on children's rights made at the summit and promote it throughout the church. Participants at the Vatican meeting included Queen Rania Al-Abdallah of Jordan and former Vice President of the United States and Nobel Peace Prize winner Al Gore. Kelsey Gussie has more on some of what was said at the summit.
Speakers from all over the world came to discuss the global crisis of millions of children without basic human rights. Seven panels covered a range of topics, from children's rights in the modern world and access to education, to the right to free time and the right to food and health care. In one of the first messages on the rights of children in the modern world, Queen Rania Al-Abdullah of Jordan exhorted the international community to care for every child, no matter their situation. She stressed that that was the promise the world made to children because every child has an equal claim to our protection and care. On another panel, former U.S. Vice President Al Gore warned against the threat of ecological devastation, which he called a burden we have placed upon the children of our planet. A willful blindness has kept many from seeing the effects of global warming, greenhouse gases, and other forms of climate change. Gore, the founder and president of the Climate Reality Project, emphasized that it is not the current generation that will live with the consequences, but our children's generations. The president of GKSD Investment Holding Group, Kamel Gharibi, described that children are the beauty of the world, yet he challenged everyone present and the international community to make this summit different than others. He argued that we must look beyond simply finding the solution to hunger and injustice for children, but we must seek to find the problem behind the problem, the why. He appealed to everyone present to move beyond words and live this call to aid children after this day. He said, "I hope that when we all leave here today, we will make concrete gestures." With this call to action and the prospect of a just future, although the summit ends today, its mission will carry on until every child has access to the most basic of human rights.
Kelsey Gussie reporting. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.